Hi, readers. Welcome to Books Connect Us from Penguin Random House. This is a podcast about staying connected with each other and the stories and authors who inspire us. On this episode, we're celebrating poetry with an all-star panel. Enjoy readings from Fatima Ashgar, author of If They Come For Us, Billy Collins, author of Whale Day, Olivia Gatwood, author of Life of the Party, Nate Marshall, author of Finna, Yana Prickroll, author of No Matter, and Jenny Zhang, author of Sour Heart, and moderator Samantha Leach, who is the culture editor at Bustle. This event was produced by Random House and Bustle for National Poetry Month. And now please enjoy an episode filled with some of our favorite poets.
I am thrilled to introduce our MC for this evening, Samantha Leach. Samantha is the culture editor at Bustle, where she oversees books, music, and movie coverage. She runs Bustle's book club franchise and has interviewed prolific writers like Celeste Ng, Jenny Han, and Alicia Keys. Prior to Bustle, Samantha spent 3 years at Glamour. And now, may I present Samantha Leach and Big Ideas Night, National Poetry Month.
Thank you so much for the warm introduction, Katie, and thank you all for joining us this evening. As she mentioned, my name is Samantha Leach, and I'm the culture editor at Bustle. I'm so excited to be here, but really I'm just very excited to be wearing makeup for the first time since quarantine. But truly, I'm just so thrilled that Bustle's partnered with Random House to celebrate National Poetry Month. We're in trying times, and I know what a solace poetry can be for so many of us. We have an incredible group of poets gathered here this evening to read, including Olivia Gatwood, Yanya Prickroll, Billy Collins, Nate Marshall, Fatima Oscar, and Jenny Zhang. I'll go ahead and let them get started, so please join me in welcoming Fatima Oscar, who is a national touring poet, performer, educator, and writer. She's the writer and co-creator of Brown Girls, which is an Emmy-nominated web series that highlights the friendships between women of color. She's also a member of Dark Noise and a 2017 Ruth Lilly and Dorothy Sargent Rosenberg Poetry Fellow. Her debut book of poems, If They Come For Us, was published by One World in 2018 and was named one of the top 10 books of the year by the New York Public Library and was also a finalist for the Lambda Literary Award. Please join me in welcoming Fatima.
Hey, everyone.
Hi, Tommy. I see you in the chat.
Okay. Can everyone hear me? It's all good. I'm just going to assume you can because no one can talk but me. I'm going to read some poems. I'm going to start actually with a poem that's not in my book. And it's called, I Don't Know What Will Kill Us First, The Race War or What We've Done to the Earth. So I count my hopes. The bumblebees are making a comeback. One snug tight in a purple flower I passed to get to you. Your favorite color is purple, but Prince's was orange, and we both find this hard to believe. Today the park is green. We take grass for granted. The leaves chuckle around us. Behind your head, a butterfly rests on a tree. It's been there our whole conversation. By my old apartment was a butterfly sanctuary where I would read and two little girls would sit next to me. You caught a butterfly once, but didn't know what to feed it. So you trapped it in a jar and gave it to a girl you like. I asked if it died. You say you like to think it lived a long life. Yes, it lived a long life. This next poem is called If They Come For Us, and it's the title poem of my book, If They Come For Us. These are my people and I find them on the street and shadow through any wild, all wild. My people, a dance of strangers in my blood. The old woman sorry dissolving to wind, bindi a new moon on her forehead. I claim her my kin and sew the star of her to my breast. The toddler dangling from stroller, hair a fountain of dandelion seed at the bakery, I claim them too. The Sikh uncle at the airport who apologizes for the pat-down, the Muslim man who abandons his car at the traffic light, drops to his knees at the call of the azan, and the Muslim man who drinks good whiskey at the start of Maghrib, the lone Kala at the park, bearing her Gurtha with Crocs. My people, I can't be lost when I see you. My compass is brown and gold and blood. My compass, a Muslim teenager. Snap back in high tops, gracing the subway platform. Mashallah, I claim them all. My country is made in my people's image. If they come for you, they come for me too. In the dead of winter, a flock of aunties step out on the sand. Their debuttas turn to ocean. A colony of uncles grind their palms and a thousand jasmines bell the air. My people, I follow you like constellations. We hear glass smashing the street and the nights opening dark. Our names, this country's wood for the fire. My people, the long years we've survived, the long years yet to come. I see you map my sky, the light to your lantern long ahead, and I follow.
I follow.
It's so amazing that we get to read on Zoom, and then because we get some of these like combinations of people that we maybe wouldn't be able to read otherwise. But it's also so strange because right after you read a poem, you're like, where's everybody? Is everyone doing okay? This poem is called Qal. Allah, you gave us a language where yesterday and tomorrow are the same word. Qal. A spell cast with the entire mouth, back of the throat to teeth. Tomorrow means I might have her forever. Yesterday means I say goodbye again. Gull means they are the same. I know you can bend time. I'm merely asking for what is mine. Give me my mother for no other reason than I deserve her. If yesterday and tomorrow are the same, pluck the flower of my mother's body from the soil. Gull means I'm in the crib, eyelashes wet as she looks over me. Gull means I'm on the bed, crawling away from her, my father back from work. Gull means she's dancing at my wedding not yet come. Gull means she's oiling my hair before the first day of school. Gull means I wake to her strange voice in the kitchen. Gull means she's holding my unborn baby in her arms, helping me pick a name. So this is the last poem that I'm going to read, and it's a new poem. I wrote it in quarantine, so I wrote it a few days ago. So it's brand new. When we thought the world would end, I didn't think it would be like this, watching my beloveds through FaceTime. The tens of apps downloaded so I can hear the scattered voices of everyone I love. In the silence of my apartment building, so loud. My whole world is now my kitchen and yellow couch, and I haven't touched anyone in days. My fingers press into my own body. I surprise myself in the mirror. It's raining outside and my skin feels so hollow. The meditation says to think of a happy day. I remember being packed in that wooded house for Angel and Hugh's graduation and Inez saying, the bitch can't dance, as I wiggled my flailing body, trying, and how easy it was to hold Safia's hand, my knee against Shira's in the back of the minivan, to brush the hair out of Sam's eyes as we played Ja Rule too loud on the way to weep at our friends graduating the bitch of an MFA. The years we've all spent in heartache of a thing we might be good at, the years spent changing cities, moving farther and farther from our loves because this might be it. And might is a strong word, like this might be our new lives and this might be forever, the ellipses of waiting and all the mites pile up together around my bed. In the morning, I have to sift through the mites to make my day worthwhile, to push my body into prayer. I have to work to not let the mites get stuck in my chest, to not drown in their sorrow. And we've spent years preparing for the apocalypse. When the white boys took up torches, and when that idiot got elected, and ice continued to melt, but I never thought it would be like this. Us all islanded, watching each other on screens, and before when we could hold each other, when we didn't know how it would end like this. Dinez and I promised when the world was really coming to an end, like truly coming to an end, we would find each other in our best dresses. I would maybe even buy a fur and we'd ride it out together. And on the phone, we say, well, bitch, this might be it. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Fatima. Up next, we have Billy Collins, who's the author of 12 collections of poetry, including The Rain in Portugal, Aimless Love, Horoscopes for the Dead, Ballistics, The Trouble with Poetry, Nine Horses, Sailing Alone Around the Room, Questions About Angels, The Art of Drowning, and Picnic Lightning. He is also the editor of Poetry 180, A Turning Back to Poetry, 180 More, Extraordinary Poems for Every Day, and Bright Wings, an illustrated anthology of poems about birds. A former distinguished professor at Lehman College of City University of New York, he is a distinguished fellow at the Winter Park Institute of Rollins College. He served as Poet Laureate of the United States from 2001 to 2003 and as New York State Poet from 2004 to 2006. In 2016, he was inducted into the American Academy of Arts and Letters. He lives in Florida with his wife, Suzanne, and his new collection, Whale Day, will be published this September. Please welcome Billy Collins.
Hi there. It's great to be, thank you, Sam, and it's great to be with this group of Random House Bards and to celebrate Poetry Month. I've always been a little suspicious of Poetry Month because I find, if you think about it, anything that has a day, a week, or a month devoted to it is a sure sign of its neglect. Mother's Day being the quintessential example. You don't hear about, like, this is National Television Month or National Alcohol Month. At any rate, it's great to celebrate it. I'm going to read not a poem about sickness or her situation, but a poem about love. I'm going to read two poems. And the first one is called Genesis, as in the first book of the Bible. Genesis. It was late, of course, just the two of us still at the table, working on a second bottle of wine, when you speculated that maybe Eve came first and Adam began as a rib that leapt out of her side one paradisal afternoon. Could be, I remember saying, because much was possible back then, and I mentioned the talking snake, the giraffe sticking their necks out of the ark, their noses up in the pouring Old Testament rain. I like a man with a flexible mind, you said then, lifting your candle-lit glass to me, and I raised mine to you, and began to wonder what life would be like as one of your ribs, to be with you all the time, riding under your blouse and skin, caged under the soft weight of your breasts, your favorite rib, I am assuming, if you ever bothered to count them, which is just what I did later that night after you had fallen asleep and we were fitted tightly back to front, your long legs against the length of mine, my fingers doing the crazy numbering that comes of love. And finally, the second poem is, well, it turns into a love poem at the end, I think, rather suddenly, but it's really a poem about reading haiku, and it's called Japan. Today I pass the time reading a favorite haiku, saying the few words over and over. It feels like eating the same small, perfect grape again and again. I walk through the house reciting it and leave its letters falling through the air of every room. I stand by the big silence of the piano and say it. I say it in front of a painting of the sea. I tap out its rhythm on an empty shelf. I listen to myself saying it. Then I say it without listening. Then I hear it without saying it. And when the dog looks up at me, I kneel down on the floor and whisper it into each of his long white ears. It's the one about the one-ton temple bell with the moth sleeping on its surface. And every time I say it, I can feel the excruciating pressure of the moth on the surface of the iron bell. When I say it at the window, the bell is the world, and I am the moth resting there. When I say it into the mirror, I am the heavy bell, and the moth is life with its papery wings. And later, when I say it to you in the dark, you are the bell, and I am the tongue of the bell ringing you, and the moth has flown from its line and moves like a hinge above our bed. Thank you.
Thank you, Billy. Up next is Olivia Gatwood, who has received international recognition for her poetry, performances, and work as an educator in sexual assault prevention and recovery. She's the author of poetry collection Life at the Party and the chapbook New American Best Friend. Her poems have appeared in such publications as Muzzle, Winter Tangerine, Poetry City, Tinderbox Poetry Journal, and the Missouri Review, and have been featured on BBC, MTV, HBO, among others. She is from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Her forthcoming novel, Whoever You Are, Honey, is said to be released with the Dial Press in 2022. Without further ado.
Hey, everyone. I hope you can hear me. Welcome to my kitchen. It's daylight where I am. I shaved my legs for the first time in a very long time the other day, and my razor was really dull. So I cut myself a bunch, little nicks, just like, but it was a mess. So I thought I'd read this poem. It's called The First Shave. I am 9. We are bored and Karen is dying. We drove to Austin that summer. So Sarah's dad, who described Karen as the great and impossible love of his life, who taught us the word lymphoma and then the concept of the prefix, how it explains where the tumor lives, could say goodbye. The house is a rind spooned out by the onset of death. What's left is a medicine cabinet full of razors, and we are hungry and alone and sitting on the living room floor where the light from a naked window slices the hardwood like melon, exposes each individual fuzz on my scabbed calf, a field of erect yellow poppies, and we have been alive as girls long enough to know to scowl at this reveal. And what better time than now to practice removal? Once, I watched my mother skin a potato in 6 perfect strokes. I remember this as Sarah teaches me to prop up my leg on the side of the tub and runs the blade along my thigh. See, she says, isn't that so much better? Before we left Albuquerque, her father warned us she will have no hair, a trait we have just begun to admire, except, of course, for the hair he is talking about, that which we hold against our necks, that which will get us husbands or compliments or scouted in a mall, eventually cut off by our envious sisters while we sleep. Thank you. So this book that I wrote called Life of the Party is mostly about my relationship to fear and being a consumer of true crime, which puzzles me sometimes, interrogating the ethics of true crime, the selective empathy of true crime, and the sensationalizing of women's murder in general. So this poem is called Will I Ever Stop Writing About the Dead Girl? And all of the ways she, I, we would be unborn, and at the hands of who? Men we once loved or who stumbled upon us, those who we ticked off or turned down, and then how they will remove what's left in small parts or on display or tucked into bed to be found by the landlord. Even when I am not writing about the dead girl, I am writing about the dead girl. Even when the girl in the poem is alive, she is dead, and I am writing about a time when she wasn't. I'm sorry for killing the mood. It's just that I can't stop thinking about her and how she must have been afraid like I am. How she too must have imagined some blue version of herself. I've always had trouble getting over people, and maybe the dead girl is the one I never will. the one that got away, whose favorite song is playing in the pharmacy while I wait for my medicine. Maybe there's a dead girl inside of me, inside of all of us, waiting for her turn to tap dance at the beauty pageant. Maybe right now she's shy and nervous backstage, but once she hears her name, she'll shuffle, ball change, and not blink twice. Okay, I just have one more poem. I wrote this poem after an article came out that essentially said that the turning point, in the point at which we can't really turn back climate change would be 2040. And it was like the biggest news at the time, which seems so long ago now. So this is sort of a love poem. It's called 2041. But for real this time, they gave us a date warning that if we don't change our ways, our plastic fetish, hunks of hot tire, black smoke thick as cream spilling into a bird's mouth, ways, something, I'm not sure what, will happen to make us gone. So I've gone and decided to collect my avocado shells and egg cracklings into a bin for soil, as if that will somehow make the world let me love you longer. I am not so naive to believe your reason is the same, that you dry your hands on your pants and scold me for letting the sink run while I scrub a pan, or that you'd carry 2 gallons of milk in each arm like identical infants before you would ever ask for a bag, that the oils and wax and soap in glass bottles are because you don't want us to die alone in the flood, but instead together, somewhere with giddy crickets and old trees, somewhere past 2040, where we drink from jars and grow our own spinach. But I think love makes us selfish. So let me admit that last week over naan and yellow curry, when you said there will be war, and though you don't believe in them, you'll have to buy a gun, because all we'll have to protect are the people we love, you said. I thought maybe you meant it was me, safe behind the door, jugs of clean water propping up the mattress, while you stand outside in our desert, rifle against the spot on your chest where my head goes, glaring into the filthy horizon, ready. Thank you.
Great, thank you, Olivia. Next up, we have Nate Marshall, an award-winning writer, rapper, educator, and editor. He's the author and editor of numerous works, including Wild Hundreds, which was honored with the Black Caucus of the American Library Association's Award for Poetry Book of the Year, and the Breakbeat Poets, New American Poetry in the Age of Hip Hop. Nate is a member of the Dark Noise Collective and co-directs Crescendo Literary. He is from the South Side of Chicago and is an assistant professor of English at Colorado College. His new collection of poetry, Finna, is due out on August 11 from One World. Give it up for Nate.
Greetings. What's up, y'all? Can y'all hear me? Can people hear me? Yes, we did it. Cool. All right. Yeah, I was going to play theme music, but then I figured that might get the thing flagged when it's on YouTube, so I'll refrain. But what's up, everybody? All right, I'm going to read just three quick poems. This first one is called What It Is and Will Be. And yeah. Ain't yet no word for a world without the cop's unruly bullet or baton. Ain't yet no word for a world without children starved and lonesome. Ain't yet no word for a world with boundless capacity for care. Ain't yet no word for a world with every bloody debt repaired and repaid. Ain't yet no word for a world with touch exclusively consensual and ecstatic. Ain't yet no word for a world where each mistake is a holy possibility to improve. Ain't yet no word for a world where there are as many genders as dandelion seeds spinning in spring. Ain't yet no word for a world where every person is vegan and the last meat they ate was the rich. Ain't yet no word for a world with no fear. ain't yet, but we working. Cool. That's the first one. And then, oh, what's up, Chicago? Southside, we out here. Yes, sir. I'll do this one. A thing that Billy said sort of made me think about this. So it's a quick one. This poem is called Black History Month. When America writes about Black life, they prefer the past tense. All right, that's the poem. All right. And then I will end with this one. This poem is called Imagine. And I guess if a thing that would help you to know going into this poem is that my partner's middle name is Canada. So just keep that in mind. Imagine. You better imagine like your life depends, because it does. That boredom out of which making is made is the only thing. Consider that first, that somebody first had to pick through all the prehistoric plants and sniff and taste and sometimes diarrhea or even die, just so you would know that a collard green with the right seasoning is a season that lasts centuries. Consider that somebody gazed at a star and said, I bet, and built a fire. Consider the first Negro on the first plantation who figured which way was north, maybe before they knew the word for north, and ran. Consider my love with the middle name the enslaved dreamed of running towards. See how I move swift in her direction. Consider how love is a great idea we keep having every day. We imagine being together, and that is the first step. Cool. All right. Thank you all so much.
Up next, we have Yanya Prickrell, who is the author of No Matter and After the Party, which was one of the New York Times' best poetry books of the year. Her poems have appeared in the New Yorker, the London Review of Books, the Paris Review, and the New York Review of Books, where she is senior editor and the poetry editor. Give it up for Yana.
Hey, thank you to Random House and everyone who's arranged this. I hope you can hear me. It is really eerie, as everyone has said, to be alone in your room and you can't see anyone, but I'm assuming everybody's there. I'm gonna start with a short love poem also, like Billy. This is a love poem for a friend. It's called Friend. I said the wrong thing again, but really meant it. Her greatness threw me and maybe knew what I meant. Benevolence of eminence, I'm testing you. You may not know when you are being tested. You're on your own to make the miracles ensue. Nowhere is protagonism so supported. She's also alone, but it's not her first event. Are you more alone when you have experience? Her mouth cues up the taste of that covetousness. It leads to nothing else than what it started as. It's criticism of books, not art or music. She's still the harshest judge of her own sentences. She shelters in my character analysis. She gets me in a side hug till I'm homesick. This next poem is called Lady. I suppose cleaning ladies are not essential workers right now, but I hope everybody is still paying theirs if they have them. Lady. Wherever she goes, the planes of horizontals wave at her their horizontal hands, the filth furry sills of restaurant windows, the increasingly horizontal curves atop once red hydrants. It goes without saying the passing roofs of cabs and the little irregular ledges on their handles, far from spick and span, call to her hands. They're confident she's too discreet to use them as the others do. Her hands restore. And other men and women, when their shapes move across, not up or down, there where they collect the motes that fill the air, these surfaces she scans, no more than scans. Is it out of habit, or has habit been turned and turned as on a spit into an appetite? Don't say the horizontals mean anything to her. They simply wait for her where others don't, like threats, but threats so ubiquitous they're comfortable waiting, like friends early to rendezvous. this is a short poem, a sonnet called Insta, as in Instagram. It sort of imagines what would have happened in Virgil's Aeneid had there been smartphones. And do you suppose if there had been phones that Dido would have chilled, monitored his posts as he sailed into a storm, the photos parading purple cumulonimbus and a zone of tender green oxygen above the horizon, all backlit deluxe with abundant cash and unspent prestige of masculinity when he demurred and beelined back to Sicily for yet another game, and settling into hate, read his captions and text them to Anna. She'd not forgive him, obviously, but regroup, restock her selfies, renovate her city for posting in panorama. And this is the last one I'll read. It's called Santo Stefano Rotondo, which is a fancy sounding name for a church in Rome that's filled with these massive frescoes of Christian martyrdoms that are intensely gory and full of dismembered limbs and cross sections of bodies. Santo Stefano Rotondo. Come, walk this path between flapping tarps, holding back on either side, construction sites. The way a bedsheet hides from her labor when the scalpel's in it. Come along behind one friend, in front of another. Looking back, the path narrows, memory a scarce resource, and bends, takes on the gentle curve of the earth, as if in the space of that city, it were given your body to feel for itself the 4 inches up and 4 inches down the per mile the planet swells. Come and look at the frescoes. They pucker with little logs. Each round end is red, with a little gray circle in the center. On each horizon, belted from sea to sea, the dim awakening potential for something equally made from ignorance to rise up all of a sudden is forecast. And if to get to safety slowly, laboriously, circumstances draw the flip book of the city, unbuttoning one building at a time until it stands revealed in grasses, slaves, with little jugs worth, little necks of red paint splashed among the pastures and meadows and symbolic birds and dewdrops everywhere red, then who am I to call it unconstructive? Thanks very much.
Last but not least, we have Jenny Zhang. Jenny was born in Shanghai and grew up in New York. She is the author of the poetry collection Dear Jenny, We Are All Fine, and the story collection Sour Heart, which was the winner of the Penn Bingham Prize for Debut Fiction, the LA Art Seidenbaum Award for First Fiction, and named one of the best books of the year by The New Yorker, NPR, and New York Magazine, among others. Her forthcoming poetry collection, My Baby First Birthday, comes out on May 12 from Tin House. Please welcome Jenny Zhang.
Hey, everyone. Hope I'm doing this right. Thank you for sending this out, Random House and all the other poets. This is really cool. I'm going to read a poem that I wrote many, many springs ago because it's spring. And this poem is called It's Spring. Everyone's still so flip and ugly. My romance will lead itself. No one who wears flip-flops as their primary footwear has ever given to the poor. Anyway, redistribution of wealth has gone the way of democracy. How many times have you carried on a relationship with a corpse? We bow three times to the dead, and this guy has the nerve to perform Western psychology on my Shanghai family. Well, F-U-C-K, kiss my broken finger blade. I don't feel like making excuses today. Did a soda company really collude with the state? I'm on the five star of yesterday. If it doesn't fit inside a post, what is it even? You must have known you lose your privacy the day you wanted someone to compliment you. And what does it take for anyone to see anyone? If history is true, then you and I are either rare or doomed. At your request, I actually do try to remove myself from public life. Would that make you happy? But I know how this works. You'll want more of me to vanish, more and more and more, until all of us are gone, leaving you and your family money and your buddies from Harvard and Yale in your polycube. And suddenly my favorite line grows sinister. We shall have everything we want, and there will be no more dying. The always sorry tremble like the smallest creatures waiting for the boot, waiting to die of natural causes so you can finally have your paradise. I was asked a few years ago to write a poem about global warming and climate change. And I was really excited because I don't often get asked to commission, to have poems commissioned, and it was like a very big publication. And I was like, yay, I'm big time now. And I wrote these poems and I submitted it. And the editor, in a very delicate way, was like, these are great, but I think it would alienate our readership, as they are enjoyers of luxury products, and we don't want them to feel bad, so we can't take these poems. And I was asked if I would write something that would, I guess, make rich people feel a little better. I just couldn't do it, so I didn't publish the poems, but I'm gonna read that poem now. And it's called TED Talk. Money will build anywhere there's a view or a coastline. All those tangled shrubs and thorny bushes your ancestors cut through centuries ago to claim in the name of a queen and a king with foul-smelling hair. These days, even the ecotone between the living and the dying has to be privatized and sold at auction. All the steps between next year and the first human year ever recorded melted so fragrantly, it became stylish to be poetic for the end of the world. Everyone's collecting coins on every interface, 1,000 identical posts about 2019 being the year of paper straws and reusable cups. Indigo dyeing in Kyoto is the new 36 hours in Tbilisi. And all the people with phones, they don't think twice about buying onboard Wi-Fi. On their way to the latest Caribbean island, still recovering from last year's hurricanes. Would it be so wrong to wish everyone with global entry be grounded until extinction is off the table? I don't think I can date another digital nomad or a normie with a dog who doesn't know what it's like to be too poor to buy their way out of disaster. Why do the rich treat blame like it's an obscenity or a fossil? Is it because they hate seeing blood, think that they are so noble for taking quick little showers and using silicone at the farmer's market? I have never seen someone forgive themselves as elaborately as the wealthy. Everyone who paid for their wellness is infecting the rest of us. And yes, I am sick, sick, sick. And I want to sterilize all the ruinous overseers, although it is not like me to dream so much. I have managed to hoard something that cannot be replicated. It will die when I die, and let no one say we didn't try to let a different kind of life bloom, and let no one say we didn't touch what was there from the beginning. So you see, it would have been impossible to revise that, to make it a poem that would make people who love luxury products feel great about themselves and also be educated on global warming. I'm gonna read a really short poem that's pretty simple. It's called Everything is Scary, But Your Love is Good. Goo goo baby, sweet baby, be the baby people didn't let you be for once in your life and see what happens. Thank you guys so much for listening. And I guess you can't say anything, so I'm kind of being a tyrant because I say thank you and you can't respond, but I see all the chats. I'm gonna read one last poem, and I'm gonna read it from my computer. And it's called Under the Chiming Bell. Thank you. Under the Chiming Bell. In the lower Piney Creek Valley, I learned to move as ghosts do. After 35 years of belching, I finally qualify as a trophy. In the woods, I am mostly small, insignificant, in love with everything and no one. Boredom is a kind of armor, capitalism no longer contagious, seeing with my own eyes each raindrop ceasing to exist. Still, I fear birth as much as death. The non-consent of existence will never be resolved in no lifetime. Has anyone ever lived through someone else's ending, or just me? It is so weird being allowed to enter, not as a servant, but as a guest. The crudeness of patronage, all those childhood prayers wasted, essentially. In the end, I was not too beautiful for this. Failed to be much of an exception at all. At least I can still dream. To possess the kind of face often inscribed into archways, mid-scream like a gargoyle with nothing better to do. The holy don't need us, wretches of a different order, looking for someone or nothing. I was supposed to be staff, and then everything changed, and it didn't even matter that I was born wrong. Will someone tell someone who I am? Will someone please, please tell me? Thank you. Have a good night, everyone.
Powerful note to end on. I want to thank Random House for having us and all of the poets joining us tonight, as well as all of you at home. Thank you all again for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Books Connect Us. For more great book recommendations and information about your favorite authors, feel free to follow Penguin Random House on social media, or visit penguinrandomhouse.com. And if you've enjoyed what you've heard, go ahead and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, as it helps more listeners to find our show. This podcast is produced by Pat Stango and edited by Clayton Gumbert. I've been Erin Leaf, and until next time, this has been Books Connect Us.